Welcome to Torah Timecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Adina Blaustein, and today we're going to be studying Nehemiah Chapter 2. Chapter 1 really left us hanging. Nehemiah poured out his soul to Hashem, asking Hashem to remember his people and to give his servant Nehemiah success. But Nehemiah's prayer didn't exactly specify what success Nehemiah was hoping for. It seems like Nehemiah gave it some thought, because chapter 2 opens a few months later, in Chodesh Nisan, so about 4 months after his prayer in chapter 1. Nehemiah sets the scene in chapter 2, verse 1. He's busy doing his royal duty as cupbearer to the king, and he hands the wine to the king. The king's name is Artaxasta, in English, Artaxerxes. According to Chazal, Artaxasta was actually Daryavesh. I'll come back to the significance of that dual identity a bit later. Anyway, Nehemiah hands a glass of wine to the king, and, as he tells us, Lo hagiti ra lefanav. I had never been out of sorts before in his presence, implying that Nehemiah seems to be approaching Artaxerxes with some distress visible on his face. The king's reaction is instantaneous. Madua panecha ra'im, va'ata incha chole, ein ze ki'im ro'alev? The king said to Nehemiah, how is it that you look bad, though you are not sick? It must be bad thoughts. Nehemiah's reaction, in the same verse, va'ira harbe ma'od, I was very frightened. Now, it could be that Artaxerxes is just being solicitous, but then why would Nehemiah be so frightened and surprised that the king asked him how he's doing? There must be something else going on. Or maybe there's actually some deeper plan going on here. Artaxerxes prompting Nehemiah to tell him why he's so distressed. Maybe this is Yad Hashem. That's actually Malbim's suggestion, because the king prompts Nehemiah to share what his deepest desire is, and Nehemiah is eventually going to petition the king on behalf of the Jewish people. So this whole episode is kind of like what happened in Megillat Esther, when Ahasuerus prompted Esther to state her case on behalf of the Jewish people. There could be another reason, perhaps a bit more frightening, why the king is scanning Nehemiah's face, very solicitous suddenly, and noticing his distress. And it gets to Nehemiah's job. Nehemiah, as we were told at the end of chapter 1, is the cupbearer to the king, Meshkel HaMelech. And chapter 2 opens, he's busy doing his duty to the king, serving him cups of wine. But what does a cupbearer actually do? It's not just serving wine. Mitzudat David, among other commentaries, suggests that Nehemiah's job as cupbearer was to taste the king's drink. In other words, be the first line of defense in case the king's food or drink was being poisoned. This isn't the kind of job that gets you a life insurance policy. The king was looking at Nehemiah's face, terrified that maybe his wine was poisoned. Any sign of distress on Nehemiah's face would cause the king to have this kind of reaction. This episode really underscores just how terrifying life must have been for Nehemiah in the Persian court. This perspective also helps us understand how Nehemiah immediately jumps on the defensive in the following verse. He simultaneously reassures the king and states his case. Va'omar la'melech, ha'melech le'olam yechyeh, madua lo yiru panai asher ha'ir beit kivrot avotai chareva u'shehara uklu ba'esh. But I answered the king, long live the king! How should I not look bad when the city of the graveyard of my ancestors lies in ruins and its gates have been consumed by fire? Artaxerxes then turns to Nehemiah and invites him to state his case and give a request to the king. Nehemiah speedily prays to God, and then in verse 5 says, Tishlacheni el Yehuda el ir kevrot avotai ve'evnena. Send me to Judah, or Yehud, as the Persians called the province, to the city of my ancestors' graves, to rebuild it. Let's just pause for a moment and reflect on how smart this response is. Nehemiah comes up with a request that makes it easy for the king to say yes. The Persians had a huge empire to control. Cyrus's edict allowing different ethnicities back to rebuild their religious places of worship set the tone for the Persian Empire and the kings that followed. Keeping all these different ethnicities in their vast empire happy and peaceful meant that there would be no rebellions, no expensive wars to wage, and most importantly, taxes would be paid in full and on time. Nehemiah now is appealing to the king's desire to keep Judeans happy, to keep the peace. He's also appealing to a king who probably had a lot of respect for the dead and was obsessed with the afterlife. In Nehemiah's explanation of his sorrow and in his request, he refers to Yerushalayim as Beit Kivrot Avotai, the city of the graveyard of my ancestors. As it will become clear later on, Nehemiah actually intends to rebuild the walls surrounding Jerusalem and restore Jerusalem to its rightful places, the city of Tzedek. There is some ambiguity if the king grants him permission explicitly to do just that, but it seems that the king does, because Artaxerxes gives Nehemiah supplies that are going to be key in rebuilding the walls. So it seems that the king really does support Nehemiah in his desire to reinforce the city of Jerusalem and rebuild the walls. In addition to timber, Nehemiah is given officers and cavalry, and most importantly, perhaps, letters of permission to take with him on his journey, and he sets off for Jerusalem. He basically becomes, as the Persian called it, the Pecha, the new governor of Jerusalem, and the surrounding area of Judah. In this role, he can levy taxes, oversee the law, and is meant to function as the link between the Judeans and the imperial Persian government. This is striking contrast to Ezra, who, in chapter 8 of the book of Ezra, we are explicitly told, was too ashamed to ask for guards, and instead relied solely on Hashem's protection. The difference in their journeys emphasizes the contrast between these two leaders. Ezra functions as a religious leader, and while Nehemiah certainly cares just as much, he functions as a shrewd politician as well. I noted earlier that this scene is evocative of Megillat Esther. In both stories, someone stands before the king, terrified that the slightest misstep could cost you your life, intent on saving the whole Jewish people. And then the grand plan that these heroes come up with to save the Jewish people is kind of actually deflating, because this master plan ends up being, let's just go ask the king. I think these parallels to Megillat Esther are noted and emphasized by Chazal. Firstly, Chazal identify Artaxerxes as Daryavesh. Daryavesh's father, according to Chazal, is Ahasuerus, the king in the story of Megillat Esther. That means that Nehemiah is standing before, improbably as it may seem, a Jewish king, the son of Queen Esther. Additionally, in verse 6, the king is described as sitting with the Shegal next to him. There's some dispute as to the identity of who the Shegal is. According to Malbim, the Shegal is the king's mother. Put this all together, that means that Nehemiah is standing in front of Queen Esther and her son, Artaxerxes, when he requests to go rebuild Jerusalem. By linking the identities of the character, Chazal are linking these stories. And it kind of makes you wonder, what if Esther had asked Ahasuerus for more than just saving the fate of the Jewish people, or allowing the Jewish people to fight back? What if she had asked to be able to go back to Jerusalem and rebuild? And what if Nehemiah, when it seems like he almost has the same opportunity to stand before the king and have his request be answered, what if he would have asked for more? Just like in Megillat Esther, these verses in Nehemiah refer to the king Artaxerxes simply by calling him Hamelech, the king. In Megillat Esther, this is famously meant to symbolize Hashem's hand working behind the scenes. And it seems clear that Nehemiah has the same realization, because as he says in verse 8, Kiyad Elokai Hatova Eli, this is all thanks to Hashem's benevolent care for me. Nehemiah then proceeds to journey to Jerusalem, protected by his guards. But even before he's able to begin his service and begin building the walls of Jerusalem, we learn immediately upon his arrival that he has opposition. Sambalat Hachoroni and Tovia Ha'ever Ha'amoni. Sambalat and Tovia are going to be Nehemiah's antagonists throughout the book of Nehemiah. Sambalat, at that time, was the governor in Samaria, in the Shomron. Tovia was a wealthy and important man. Sambalat's location in Samaria is also a really key detail. Here's some historical context to explain why. After Shlomo's death, the kingdom of Israel was divided into two kingdoms, Judah in the south and Samaria in the north. The Assyrians conquered the north and exiled the 10 tribes. And then the Babylonians conquered the entire area and exiled the Judeans in the south to Babel. After the Babylonians destroyed the Beit HaMikdash and Jerusalem and the city walls, Jerusalem as a city stopped being the economic hub of Judah. Samaria, which was a totally different province, started to become more prominent. And for some time, Samaria even controlled the area of Judah. Sambalat, as the governor of Samaria, was a wealthy and powerful person. He probably saw Nehemiah's arrival as governor of Judah as a threat to his personal power. Sambalat probably viewed the second Beit HaMikdash with some suspicion, as anything that would make Jerusalem once more the focus of Israel would threaten his power. And not only that, now Nehemiah comes on the scene with material materials, truckfuls of building supplies, and the title of governor, Sanballat was probably incredibly threatened by Nehemiah. The other enemy listed here is Tobiah. He was probably governor of the Ammonite region. He probably felt similarly to Sanballat about Nehemiah's appointment. Anything that meant that Judah would function more independently meant that Samaria or Ammon wouldn't be able to control it as much. And so it makes a lot of sense why Sanballat and Tobiah didn't exactly welcome Nehemiah with open arms. Nehemiah arrives in Jerusalem and then lies low for 3 days, which, by the way, was exactly how long Ezra is described as waiting before he gets to work. Then, in the middle of the night, with just a few trusted men, Nehemiah goes on a secret tour, surveying the breached walls of Jerusalem under the cover of dark. The night survey of the city walls begins and ends with the Valley Gate. It seems that he left the city on the western side, turned left, then south, before returning. The ruins that he sees are so extreme that it's difficult passage with an animal, and they need to hike by foot. According to Rashi, amazingly enough, he and his men actually break the walls even further to ensure that in the morning, the Judeans who see will all agree that repairing the walls is in fact a crucial thing to do. In the morning, Nehemiah makes his purpose clear, addressing the Yehudim, the Kohanim, the nobles, and the rest of the officials in Jerusalem. And he says in verse 17, Va'omar lehem atem ro'im hara'a asher anachnu ba'asher Yerushalayim chareva u'she'hara'a nitztu ba'esh lechu v'nivneh et chomat Yerushalayim v'lo nehiyeh od charpa. I said to them, you see the bad state we are in, Jerusalem lying in ruins and its gates destroyed by fire. Come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem and suffer no more disgrace. Nehemiah then emphasizes that he sees that Hashem, Yad Elokai, as he says in verse 18, is enabling all of this. And he also shares with them that the Persian king has entrusted with him permission and support. And then, once again, we hear about the opposition. This is the second time in the same chapter that the text emphasizes the opposition. The first time, Sanballat of Samaria and Tobiah were displeased that Nehemiah arrived from Shushan and was going to set about making some repair. Now that Nehemiah has stated his goal explicitly, which is to rebuild the city walls, yet another enemy joins. So now we have ganged up against Nehemiah, Sanballat of Samaria, north of Jerusalem, Tobiah of Ammon, which is east of Jerusalem, and a third individual is now named Geshem Ha'arvi. Based on his title and other references from Nehemiah in the book of Ezra, he was probably located south of Jerusalem. So we have north, east, south. We have opposition on all sides. Jerusalem is once again surrounded by enemies. And they mock Nehemiah in verse 19. Ma hadavar hazeh asher etem osim al hamelech etem mordim? What is it that you're doing? Are you rebelling against the king? Their words have a real edge because they accuse Nehemiah of rebelling against Artaxerxes. This reminds us once again of the precarious situation that the Jews are in. They have no real independence. This accusation of rebellion carries real weight and with it real fear. Jerusalem is part of the province of Judah, and Samaria, a different province where Sanballat is from, are two different provinces, but they both must remain loyal to Persia. And Nehemiah is well aware that Artaxerxes probably only agreed to this plan if peace between the provinces are kept. Nehemiah doesn't answer the charges directly, but he emphasizes, probably speaking directly to the Judeans who have thrown their support with him, and probably also to himself, with words that are meant to bolster up the people's confidence and his own confidence. Elokei Hashamayim hu yatsliach lanu, v'anachnu avadav nakum uvaninu. Hashem of the heavens, he will grant us success. We, his servants, will start building. And then, in language that's so evocative of Ezra chapter 4, what Zerubbabel said years earlier, Nehemiah says to his enemies, V'lachem ein chilek utzdakah v'zikaron b'Yerushalayim. You have no share or claim or stake in Jerusalem. These concluding words of the chapter in verse 20 are a declaration that Jerusalem, as part of Judah, is an independent province. Sanballat has no claim over them. And maybe this reveals what Nehemiah's ultimate goal really is. At the start of chapter 2, when he asked the Persian king Artaxerxes for permission to rebuild the graves of his ancestors, all through his journey with the Persian guards from Shushan to Jerusalem, and all through his survey of the damaged city walls, and even now to his proclamation that he will rebuild the damaged walls of Jerusalem, His goal all along just may be exactly that, to establish Judah as an independent province. And in doing so, bring it one step closer to Geula. As we'll see in the next chapter, he won't only face opposition from the surrounding provinces, he'll begin to face opposition from within the province of Judah and even within the city of Jerusalem itself. Thank you for studying together. Le'ilo Nishmat Rose Forman, Rezel Rachel Bat Aryeh Lieb, and Rachel Zeitlin, Rachel Bat Shlomo.